Spoken Word, half an hour of poetry and performance, your connection to Melbourne's grassroots poetry scene, the voice of those of us who have nothing but our voices.
Good morning and welcome to 3CR Spoken Word. My name is Di Cousins and today I'm interviewing Anne Elvey. Anne has previously been on the program and she has a new book out, This Flesh That You Know. Anne is also a very visible member of the poetry community. She's the editor of the Plumwood Mountain Journal. And she's a volunteer with the Melbourne Poets Union and contributes in lots of different ways and is also published in many different magazines. And previously I spoke to her on Spoken Word when she released her volume called Kin, which came out in 2014. So welcome, Anne.
Oh, thanks, Di. Nice to be here.
So the title poem of your new collection is called This Flesh That You Know. I was wondering if you'd like to read it.
I will. This flesh that you know is all that you have. You saw the long sweep of the scoop of pelicans cross the stop-start peak. Their synchronous glide was broken by one pair of wings and then another that worked the air, not quite in time, and over again they wheeled. Their pinions, as they faded and dropped to the south or down to land, had their own logic, like skin and its silence. You can learn you have privilege, but still not feel it. The traffic pulls toward order. You find yourself like a broad-billed bird en route to familiar water, where litter is caught in silt. The driver in front stops. You break. The wings hang on the sky. They churn air against gravity. They obey a will, not to fall.
So, Anne, what was the inspiration behind that poem?
Well, a couple of things. At one level, I was thinking about white privilege as I was driving along. And I was on Springvale Road, and I don't really drive in Peakow very often. In fact, I don't drive all that much because I work from home. And I can't remember why I was on Springvale Road at peak time, but we're in stop-start traffic, and as we were in the traffic, I was watching these pelicans fly across and down, and then a bit distracted, so had to stop. So there are a number of elements just from what actually happened, but I guess there was more to it about, you know, their being and what they were doing, and just that, bringing that together with what I was thinking about in terms of my privilege as a white person.
Yes, well, it's a very evocative series of images. You know, the image of this amazing formation of birds that somehow hangs in the sky. Mm. Yeah, against, you know, the logic of gravity. Tell me, how did you come to be putting together this new chapbook?
Well, after Kin, I guess I worked on some new poems and I had some older poems that I hadn't put in Kin. And one day I just happened to be looking at the Australian Poetry website and saw this Canadian competition for a small chapbook of poems. And they asked for 15 poems that had not been previously published in a collection but could have been published in journals. And I thought, well, I might have some poems that would fit together. So I sort of went back and looked through my poems and put them together and did a bit of editing or some heavy editing on some of them and sent them off. And it was quite a nice competition because you put in your competition fee and you actually got a free book. So it wasn't like it felt like the fee was a big burden anyway. That would have been around November last year. And in January, I got an email saying I'd won.
Yay!
Because there were, well, they gave a Canadian winner and an international winner. And apparently they weren't surprised that there was an Australian winner because they felt there was a bit of an affinity between Canada and Australia in any case.
Right.
So that was nice.
It's fantastic. When was the book published?
I think it came out in about July, August.
Right.
And the prize was getting was copies of the book.
Right.
And they're hand-stitched, which is really nice, and a small amount towards a launch. So that was nice too.
Great. So you had your launch party a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And who launched the book?
Garth Madsen. As many people would know Garth, quite well-known poet from Frankston.
Yes.
And we had the launch at my house in Seaford, so, that was lovely, and he did a lovely job.
He did a great job.
Mm.
Would you like to read another poem?
This poem is about my father, and in the last line it just adapts a line from his wartime diary, which he actually gave me when I turned 18. Christmas holidays at home. From the shadows of sand and clear water, and tiny fishes scooting, the gulls high and the shark patrol buzzing beneath streaks of white across a possible blue. You take us out, up to your knees, and teach us to dive and swim between your legs. The day is sticky with ice cream. You build small things and maintain the house. There are family games on Sundays. You sketch two intersecting squares and join the vertices to form a cube. You give things perspective. You grip me with stories and sleep. I've got a bone to pick with you. You hold the tool I left out in the rain. You quote me Kipling's If and Gray's Elegy. You give me your wartime diary with a few pages cut out. I am 18. Reading you at 21. Moritai, August 15, 1945. We learn to walk with limbless hearts.
Very beautiful.
Thank you.
And what was happening in the moment that you decided to write that particular poem?
I don't know. Just writing about my dad. He was still alive at that stage.
Right.
Yeah. I liked my dad, yeah. So... Yeah, I mean, he always wanted to be a writer and he didn't really get round to it or, you know, he had too much else to do.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but he wrote a few things in this wartime diary.
Mm.
And he had to leave school at 13, so.
But it is a beautiful line, we learn to walk with limbless hearts.
It is, yeah. Yeah. I think his was slightly different, but it had the limbless hearts image. And he actually had, so he wrote it on the last day of the war when he was in Moritai.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Moritai is in Kokoda or where?
No, it's one of the islands of Indonesia, I think. It's up that way.
Right.
Yeah.
We might just go to a track. This is from the artist Gwino, a Welsh artist, and it's the album is called Why Did Olaf?
Mute morning. I woke in a strange dream of a priest who pitied the child born to the mother, no longer a nun. From the pew behind, I was the eye that spoke up to power. When I woke, the light was soft, grey, with a promise of rain, but on the ear the camellia with its early winter splashes of deep pink, squawked the squawk of a wattle bird, answered from the next yard. I wrote you a card, knowing I would not see you again in this, the only transience we have. Dressed and breakfasted, I walked for 40 minutes to the beach and back, where the sea and sky bled into each other, a wash of blue and grey, a tone I recalled from the stained glass florets of a Mary window. I posted the card on the way, not knowing you had already died.
Yes, beautiful. So tell me about that. So it was about a particular friend.
It was about a particular friend, Carol Hogan, who was a Blessed Sacrament sister. But the reference to the nun isn't to her. It was something that came up in a dream. She was in her early 80s, diagnosed with, I think it was pancreatic cancer, and toward the end, around Christmas, not last year, the year before, so 2 years ago nearly. And prior to that, she'd been very active, both with family and in ACRATH, which is an anti-slave trafficking or trafficking organisation. And she, you know, lobbied in Canberra and various things. And so her diagnosis was quite sudden, and she was only a few months really before she was in palliative care. And in the last sort of months, she could really only see very, very close friends because she was so tired. So I'd seen her about a month before she died, and I kind of knew that I wouldn't. This morning I sort of knew that I really wouldn't see her again. So I wrote to her. And then when I got home, I heard that she'd already died.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's one
sort
of those times.
Yeah. Well, yeah. A moment when everything sort of comes together on some level.
Yeah. So, but she was a very interesting woman. She'd been through a lot of changes in the Roman Catholic Church, from being in an enclosed order to being very social justice oriented, women, strong women, in living still part of their community overall, but living individually and, you know, in solidarity with other women.
And engaged in the community outside.
Working
on ending the trafficking of women is a excellent project.
Religious sisters in Victoria are very involved in that across different congregations.
I've met some religious sisters also who are very supportive of refugees.
Exactly. Especially Bridget Arthur.
Right.
Many. Many.
Yes.
Many Brigidine sisters. And though it was a dream, I was in a religious order in my 20s, and that was the Brigidine sisters. So I'm actually quite proud of having a connection to them, because they have a very strong social justice focus, especially with asylum seekers and refugees. And they have a Brigidine asylum seeker project.
Right. Yeah, well, these are all amazing things. And in India, we used to say drops of water fill a glass, so which means lots of little things make a difference.
I hope so.
I think they do.
Yeah, it's hard to do big things.
Well, we can do little things.
Yeah.
So have you got a bit of a social justice theme to the collection, do you think, or what are the binding themes, do you think, in the
I think
collection?
Really what brought the collection together was more what you might call slightly domestic themes.
Okay.
And that might be why I would like to see the domestic in a wider, more than human frame. But I think, in a way, that's why I put these together, because I was thinking another larger collection might go in a different direction.
Right.
I'm not sure yet, but that would be. So I thought these, because they had some of those domestic, sort of, well, domestic in inverted commas, but things about family and small objects and objects in the house and things like that, might fit together.
Yeah. Yes, and I think there's a lot of beauty in a small collection to convey a mood and a particular focus, which can be very fractured, you know, if you have a much larger book.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you can have a more concentrated attention. So you're listening to 3CR Spoken Word Program. My name is Di Cousins, and today we're interviewing Anne Elvey about This Flesh That You Know, which is a new chapbook. There's a rather interesting poem here about a cuneiform tablet in the State Library of Victoria. I'm wondering if you'd like to read that.
Okay. Well, this tablet is still there, I think. I haven't looked recently, but I think it's still there. Cuneiform tablet in the State Library of Victoria. What can no longer be touched? The aged skin, the rare, rests in a muted light, in a spotlight. Short print runs and handmade things inhabit a cave of black partitions with glass echoes of the old museum and its walkthroughs housing phosphorescent rocks. Now that labyrinthine place is angled steel. Here are the beat poets, Britannica in 19th century inks, a Torah scroll and an ancient notepad of clay. The wedges signify stock whose descendants were skinned for the scroll under glass or for a codex named for a mountain. On the third floor, under the library's dome, by a roped-off spiral stair, the indentations in the clay recall the press of a sharpened reed. Tablets of this size were also used for travel inventories and sacrificial lists. They hardened in fire or sun. This palm pilot was stacked for burning. Framed against the dark in a precise atmosphere, it is preserved under glass. I cannot leave my trace, nor weigh its matter in a glove. Three clasps hold it like a jewel.
Yes, and they're very, very special, those cuneiform tablets, aren't they? Some of the first recorded writing, I think.
Yeah, but it struck me it was for everyday use, like just recording stock and so on. So it was a bit like our little palm, our little tablets now. It had, very mundane use.
Yeah, but it's amazing how things become something else when they're under glass.
Indeed.
You know, I remember an exhibition, it was like a surrealist exhibition, which had a huge pile of black jelly beans in one corner and that, you know, had turned into art in the gallery. So I took some. I think everyone was invited to take some. And again, the State Library of Victoria is a wonderful repository of special things.
Yes, yeah. And I guess I was also referring to like childhood memories of when you wandered through when it was the museum.
Yes.
And those, you know, the aisles you'd go through that had the phosphorescent rocks and I didn't put it in here, but, you know, the machines, you pressed a button and something happened.
Yeah. Yeah, and stuffed animals and things.
Oh, yeah, taxidermy, yeah.
Yes. Okay, so now recently you've been published in the Australian Poetry Journal. Would you like to read that poem?
Okay. So this poem is called Freight, and it's from... It actually came about some years ago when I went on a bit of, well, walkabout, but in a car in South Australia. Freight. My ravelled pasts uncoil along the level way I take to Spencer Gulf. The Murray stretches beside me, a diversion unseen in its shell. Its pipeline is like the lizard that warmed itself under the road train of the nation. Strong curves lie on the verge, ochre and ruddy, hide and hind. The rust of the soil runs in Clare's wine, the lead of Peary in the children's blood. Sheep are the colour of country. At Port Augusta I read that Flinders sailed until the water turned to ground. In his ranges dry scrub hugs the soil. I hug the road. A kingfisher holds to a dead limb. Three emus pause in bough and peck beside a fence, while a raven tastes the blue tongue's broken flesh.
The pelicans fly and the sand dunes roll, sculpted by the blue weight of the sky. All of us kids are all the same. My dad gave me my mama's name, Josie, Robert and Ruby, Mark, Tess, Yimmy, then there's me.
Disability Day on 3CR, 12 hours of community radio by, for and about people with disability. So we're talking to Anne Elvey, who's just produced a new book, This Flesh That You Know. Anne, what else have you been working on lately?
Well, I've been uploading the content for Plumwood Mountain Journal, the special issue and archive for Martin Harrison. a New South Wales poet who died just over a year ago. And Peter Minter and Stuart Cook were the guest editors for an issue of Plumwood Mountain that's dedicated to honouring Martin and his work in eco-poetry and eco-poetics. And that issue has sort of spread out a bit, so it's being added to as we go. There's also poems out for the February issue with the guest editor for that issue, Tricia Dearborn. Also been editing a chapbook for Melbourne Poets Union by Castlemaine poet Catherine Seppings, and that's out now. So it's called When Embers Dance.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. It's got a gorgeous cover.
Oh, great. Yeah. I look forward to reading it. Mm. Yeah, and you've also had a poem in a new book. Tell me about the new book.
Well, Donna Ward at Inkerman and Blunt had this idea that poems are the prayers of our secular world, secular not being opposed to religious, but... she got... Kevin Brophy and Geordie Elberston to edit a collection which has just been launched recently in November. So, yes, I have one poem in that.
Oh, would you like to read it?
Yeah, thank you, I would. Yeah, it's called You Are. You are my creek, slow to clear, alert elegance of a white neck beside the litter trap, a gaze shared across species. You are five ducks breaking the meniscus. They tolerate algal blooms. You paddle the life of us with your webbed feet under. You are the indifference of the rain or of sea that accepts the heavy metal of our dross. The bilge of a ship that rides the horizon's unhurried rail. The sun sinks behind the headlines. You have not read the IPCC reports. You shrug. The sky darkens. You are the nonchalance of storms. The ocean makes its advance. Too late, we stack sandbags. We dare not say, pity or spare us.
That's a very interesting poem. What did you mean by do not pity or spare us in the last line?
Well, I guess with the poem I was thinking about how we might think about the divine in relation to climate change. And it was about not letting ourselves off the hook with some idea of a God that might save us. So I think that's why the last line goes there.
At the same time, there is hope.
Well, there is, yeah. But I think I would say at least that hope's a choice against despair in the face of the evidence.
Right.
So it's an orientation toward the future that empowers one to still act.
Yes, yeah. Yes. I think it's important to keep acting and to keep making change.
Yeah.
Change is always possible.
Exactly. But it doesn't necessarily mean that we will make enough change to as individuals. But if we don't do anything, then...
We can be sure
that
things will get worse.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's sort of having some courage to hope sort of thing.
Yeah, it's a balance. Yeah. Thank you very much for coming in. This has been the Spoken Word program, and we've been talking to Anne Elvey.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.